Hey, in the immortal words of Judy Brown, happiness is a choice. We're happy you're spending some time with us, Chip and Zay, right here, holding it down. Midday, I'm Texas Sports Unfiltered, 2 to 4. Tell your friends and enemies, make sure they got alarms set in their phone to go off every weekday at 2 o'clock to remind you to come hang out with your boys. You know what I'm saying? It is a terrific Tuesday, December 16th, T-minus 9 days to Christmas. I just keep saying that so that everybody, you know, it sinks in eventually. If you got stuff to do to, you know, make it happen, because we are closing in. Zay, the right call, Collier, the best basketball official in the history of Central Texas. He is thinking very seriously about getting back into the game because he's got them skills and he can't just let them sit on the bench.
Kind of you to say those words. How you doing, everybody? Happy Tuesday, everybody. Feeling good, feeling great. Chip, how are you?
Good.
Kind of you say those words. You know, you heard the stories Drew told us last week. Our great guest, Drew Fibianich, senior executive director, senior bowl chairman, all that good stuff. I'm telling you, getting back out there, it's not a smart move.
It's not?
You know, it's not for me. I'm not everybody. I get PTSD. I see guys get hurt every day. I get it. People get hurt every day, B. But, you know, I can't look at that and then look at my physique and where I am as an athlete or lack thereof and just put myself in that type of danger. You know,
this is danger.
Yeah. Every time a quick steal happens as a ref, that's quick change of direction. You know what I'm saying? Because you got to turn around and you got to go the opposite end of the court. In that movement, I feel my Achilles right now saying, Zay, you even thinking about it woke me up. You know what I'm saying? That's not a good feeling. I always be thinking about my body instead of thinking about what's most important at the time, which is the game that's going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how Dick Bavetta and all them old heads did it back in the day. Now, the pace was a lot slower. Nowadays, Dick Bavetta, he wouldn't last in this age of the NBA. And that's why a lot of those older refs that started officiating in this era, they really got left behind because there's just so much up and down. You look at the science into it. Big reason why a lot of guys are getting hurt nowadays because they're just running so many more miles every season than they did during the Bird, Magic, Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal era. So with the era being as fast paced as it is, it sounds good on paper. On paper, it sounds good for your boy to get back out there on the court, you know, give it my all and do something that I do very well, which is call a damn good basketball game as an official.
Yeah. But
the body chip is just, I can't do it. And that's okay. You know, I've come to terms.
You don't say can't. Because if you put in the time and the effort and the energy,
see,
you would be back to your prime in no time.
Okay. All right.
I feel it.
You know what? That's Tell big me. Of you to say. And Phillip Rivers also gives me a little life, too. You know, that's my guy. That Michael, you're right. Rivers, which Rivers wasn't moving very well. You know, the stats weren't crazy. But threw for a touchdown. Steichen put him in such a crappy situation. He had to throw a pick at the end of the game just because they were desperate. I want to put that on Phillip.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Then he's.
I need that motivation.
He's got the start again this week.
The move.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a good move. Who else they going to start?
I mean.
Like, what would you call him for?
What about my man Riley Leonard?
So, what? Riley ain't ready. Riley ain't going to the Hall of Fame. Riley ain't
ready.
Yeah, Riley ain't going to the Hall of Fame.
Riley ain't ready.
You know what I'm saying? Phillip knew where everybody was when he came back. That ball was coming out of his hands quick. There might have been one pass over 15 yards that I saw through the air. You know, which that's tough to keep up, but I think Phillip, week two, San Francisco, be ready. Cause y'all gonna keep sleeping on that underneath stuff, and then Phillip's gonna hit you bow right over the top. And you ain't gonna see what coming. Phillip's got something. That was just a warm-up week. Seattle, that was just a warm-up week. Now, week two, a little more acclimated. All them emotions are out. There was a lot of emotion in that game. You know what I mean? He was crying at the podium and stuff. There was a lot. All that stuff, it's over with. Now it's strictly football. The Texans on your tail. The Jags, they trying to take the division. So everybody's locked in. I'm sure Carly Ursay Gordon gave a hell of a speech this week to the team, motivational speech, just to keep everybody understanding that the main thing is still the main thing. Win the division and make some noise in the playoffs. The AFC, I have no idea what's going on there. I'm sorry, Denver. Shout out to Sean Payton. Shout out to Bo Nix. I got to see it to believe it. Because let's say, just watching Aaron Rodgers and them yesterday, I know Miami's not good, but Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. So if we don't pay attention to the season and we just look at names and we say Aaron Rodgers versus Bo Nix, I know the better team, but we're just talking about quarterbacks here. I know Bo Nix is playing hell of a season. Terrific year two. Good for him. He's definitely making the case for all those starts that he had in college, now benefiting him that now that he's in the National Football League. They want you to have 30 or more starts. Bo Nix, he got like 50 of them things. He played a lot of football. He looks ready. He's playing like he's ready. But Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. Like, I don't care. He made some throws yesterday, threading the needle again. His mind for the game, forcing penalties on the other team because you know he always, you know, sees 12 on the field, guys chopping to that sideline. Ball already snapped, brother. Laundry comes out. Rodgers throwing it to no one. He chunks it to no one, but he knows that flag's coming. He does that like once a year. I swear, it's always in a big moment, like just outsmarting guys. AFC, no faith in the AFC.
Yeah, the Colts are toast. I mean, that's
simple. What is
Texans?
That
you can't talk me off my Texans.
Your Texans.
My Texans. Your I Texans. Declared them Super Bowl worthy 3 weeks ago. We got a post-it note. As of December 9th, Houston Texans will be in the Super Bowl. Book it. I'm taking those odds right now. But I see we got some smart aleckies. Not CB, the world's greatest producer in the history of radio. But Holly, I'm assuming this is in reference to the story that I wrote last night, saying Arch Manning will be back as the quarterback for the Texas Longhorns in 2026.
Yeah, I saw the folks were getting after you pretty rough on Twitters.
Yeah, because they all are haters. They thought Manning was so bad. What else was he going to do? They weren't paying attention to the last five games when my man accounted for 16 touchdowns. I'm only giving him one interception. He has two, but one of them went right through the hands of Parker Livingston at Mississippi State. So I'm only putting one of those two turnovers in the final five games on Arch Manning. So I see you, funny person, Holly. And that's good. That's good. Because I did slap a breaking tag on there because I wanted people to pay attention. And guess what? They paid attention.
I got them.
I got you. You paid attention.
Got him, huh?
So even if you came back with some snappy comment, well, where else was he going to go? Hey, if Arch Manning declared for the draft, guess where he'd go? First round. Because the pro scouts saw that upticks. They see that pocket presence. They see that ability to slide, step up, keep his eyes downfield, take a shot right as he's delivering that pigskin. Arch is, he's starting to get some of those Bo Nix calluses, starting to get some of that, you know.
Caleb Williams.
Yeah, you gotta be in the fire. You gotta smell that charcoal. Get some of those, you know, get some of those blisters on you. It hurts. You gotta go through the pain and then come up and look like a guy who wants to keep going. And probably the best quote I heard from Arch all year was when I asked him about his resolve. And he said, when you're a quarterback, you've got to be the most confident guy on the field. And that's how I'm going to carry myself. No matter what, that's never going to change. And look, at the beginning of the year, I don't know that he was carrying himself like the most confident guy. But the fact that he can say that now shows you he's got that confidence. That confidence tank is full. And look, he's going to have some challenges. You know, his defense going to be without some personnel. He might have to. I mean, listen, I'm excited to see the young guys. Don't get me wrong. But no Anthony Hill, no Leonga Lafau. I'm like, couldn't you keep Leonga Lafau in the fold?
He wanted too much.
We couldn't even work out the Cheez-It Bowl. You know, portal doesn't open until January 2nd. Uh-uh. 2 days after the Cheez-It Bowl. But, yeah. So, I'm excited. But, listen, Arch Manning, he showed he can carry a team. Because look at the Arkansas game. Arkansas was going, they were scoring. Was that 52-37?
Yeah.
Texas defense giving up 37? And Arch was like, no problem. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Right down the field, touchdown. He caught a touchdown in that game. So, yeah, I think that's welcome news for all the folks on the 40 acres. It was expected because Arch Manning has been very deliberate in his college experience. He knew he played at little private Isidore Newman in New Orleans, that he was going to have to come to a program, get, you know, up to speed, playing against guys his own size. Remember, his brother, Hyde, was his center. Arch towers over Hyde, and Hyde was his center. So, yeah. And I like the way Arch is doing it. I like the whole family. They're being patient. There's no rush. Arch needs that experience. He needs more. He needs another 12 games at least. He's got 14. He'll have 15 after the bowl. He'll, you know, God willing, have 27 starts at least by the end of the regular season in 2026. And now you're getting in that neighborhood, that 30 start neighborhood, 30 starts in college. The NFL's like, yeah. Yeah, you've seen some stuff. You've seen some different defenses. You're starting to know what you're looking at. And then it all just speeds up. About 5, Mach 5, once you get to the league.
Yeah. Yeah, think about, you know, if you're in a coma for 5 months, and think about the hype that's coming with Arch Manning in July and about how he'd be the number one pick in the 2026 draft then. You wake up from your coma, you look at your article, Chip, and I don't think that's going to be a hater. That's going to be a guy's like, oh, yeah, this is what was supposed to happen. But clearly it didn't. And you see a lot of guys that were in that class with Arch Manning coming out of high school. Where are they at now? All different schools. Nico Ilimaliava, Tennessee to UCLA. Dante Moore, UCLA to Oregon. Jackson Arnold goes from Oklahoma to Auburn, and he's about to go to another place. Malachi Nelson went from SC to Boise State to freaking UTEP. Arch Manning, he's still at the same school he signed with in 2023. That means something. I know a lot of folks said, well, no one leaves Texas. Ask Leonga LaFalle that shit. No one leaves Texas. Yeah, people leave Texas, all right? So I ain't trying to hear it. You're right. They are patient. They're saying everything that they said from jump. You know, when grandpops said what he wasn't supposed to say, but everybody knew, like, no, Arch coming back. And then Arch played it cool, like, yeah, he apologized. I don't know why when grandpa said that, but hey, I'm just trying to focus on football anyway. I ain't paying attention to the outside noise. But we knew how this was going to go. And I don't think the family's really surprised that Arch struggled early, because they knew this offensive line was going to be up and down. And early, they were way more down than they were up, which affected everything else. Ryan Wingo wasn't as good as he was supposed to be this year. Emmett Mosley not being healthy early on set this team back. I really don't know why DeAndre Moore's entering the draft, if that's solidified or not. I don't understand that. I don't think he's put up enough film. Like, Jordan Whittington had to go. He didn't have any eligibility left. I know that's a comparison we all make, but he didn't have no eligibility left, and he's grinded his ass off to stay on the LA Rams, and he might get a Super Bowl because of all that grinding that he did. With the way they looking, I don't think DeAndre Moore is that yet. So it's very odd that he's leaving, but I wish him the best. I hope it all works out for him. Hope he proves me wrong. But yeah, man, like, everything wasn't peaches and roses this season for Arch Manning, and he stuck with it. He didn't bitch about his horrible offensive line. He was getting lit up every single game, taking shots. I don't know how he didn't get hurt. For real. Right. I really don't know how he didn't get hurt. I know he was concussed, but he came back. I saw Jaden Daniels get concussed earlier this year. That fool was out for like 3 weeks.
Arch was back 6 days later.
Yeah, CJ Stroud, he got concussed earlier. He was back for like out for 3 weeks. Arch was back, ready to go, not missing any reps. The respect that he earned from his teammates, man. He's done everything the right way. So 2026, the hype makes sense. 2025, hell no, it didn't make no sense. But he's earned the hype now. He's earned that. All the Heisman talks, first round talks, he's earned that.
And he can justify it if they put some talent around him. If, on the offensive line, you got to bring in, I mean, you're going to have to do some work in the portal. And that's why I think we're, you know, Connor Robertson's like, hey, what's going on? And I mean, it's all happening. These next 2 weeks, you're going to see, everything get compressed. Texas, everybody's trying to line up what they're going to get right now in the portal. Like, you're not going to hear about it, but it's all happening.
Yeah.
And agents, Brandon Harris is like this. Hello. Yep. Okay. Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. Wait. Okay. And if they can get this offensive line looking like what Quinn Ewers had, or better, well then, yeah, you're really going to see Arch Manning come to life, because that guy got rocked. He got rocked against Florida. He got rocked against Kentucky. And that was weird. Like, Sark stuck with that vertical passing game way too long.
Way too long.
Got him in trouble. Lost him the game against Florida. So he comes out with the quick passing game against OU. It was perfect. Roll the pocket. We saw Arch throwing while moving to his right, while moving to his left, and hitting the target. And you're like, okay. He's got that Colt McCoy ability. He might be more accurate outside the pocket than he is inside the pocket at times, because we also saw him, miss a couple of layups, as Steve Sarkisian calls it, when he doesn't set his feet and leaves that open stance and kind of slings it and it misses the target. But he's a guy who learned so much this year. He learned pain and suffering after getting rocked like he did against Florida. He got humiliated with that New York Times headline. Arch Manning, the first flop in college football. Like, at that time, you weren't sure which way Arch was going to go, because it had been up and down. He just got smashed. And you didn't know what the hell was going on with the offensive line. Like, I just remember walking out of the swamp going, they cannot put that offensive line back out on the field. And sure enough, they did against OU. And the guys all rallied. Arch was on fire in that game. He was bobbing his head and pointing at the OU fans. He was feeling it. And he put that golden hat on and could not have been happier. And then the next week, they went off to Kentucky and he was missing Jack Endries all alone.
That was tough.
We're one a guy within 10 yards of Jack Endries, and you're like, oh God, I thought we were past that. And then Mississippi State happened, and that fourth quarter, that was his first fourth quarter comeback. He had a third quarter comeback against OU. He was down 6-3, played a brilliant third quarter against OU, probably the best third quarter of the season until the A&M game. And played great, but against Mississippi State, down 17 to a team that hadn't won an SEC game in 2.5 years. You're going to be the slump buster for Mississippi State? No. Arch Manning said no. And he came to life. If Ryan Wingo would have held on to a couple footballs, that comeback would have been accelerated a little bit. But, and with the help of that fourth down roughing the passer call, and Ryan Niblett returning a punt for a touchdown, but he did it. And then he gets knocked out of the game in the first play of overtime. He's in the medical tent when Matt Caldwell hits that 10-yard fade ball to Emmett Mosley. But like you said, Zay, we're all like, he's in protocol. He's not, not looking, okay, Thursday. Well, if he can practice Thursday, he can probably play. And then boom. He goes out there and he absolutely destroys Vanderbilt. 34-10 in the fourth quarter. Arch was on fire. 328 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, no picks. He totally outplayed Pavia until Pete Kwiatkowski started playing patty cake and let Pavia rebuild his resume there at the end. But yeah, Arch is a different dude.
If Vanderbilt beats Texas that day, Diego Pavia is the Heisman winner.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, all of his Heisman moments were coming in DKR.
Right?
It was 4th and 20. Woo, first down. You know, 67-yard touchdown. Oh, boy. Yeah, it was. That was rough. Yeah. That was rough. Because then it was 34-31, and you're like, what did you just do, Texas? You completely dominated this game for three quarters, and now it looks like you barely survived. I mean, yeah.
Steve Sarkisian, there were moments where made some big mistakes, man, because you mentioned, why are you running a vertical passing game with this personnel so late into the season? Why wasn't that established in camp? Because we heard Dan Neal come on our show and said he watched practice before the season started. He was like, his offensive line, this ain't it. So if Dan Neal's out here seeing it, he ain't there every practice. Sark, you're there every practice. So why? That's what's so confusing. Yeah,
Dan was pissed.
He was hot.
I've never seen Dan Neal more upset after a game than after that Florida game. He came on with us and he was like, I was so pissed. I could hardly talk because, like, what are they doing out there? What is this offensive line? What's happening? And he obviously didn't like what he was seeing on both sides of the ball because Texas's defense got run on for the first time, really. And it wasn't, they weren't ready. They got ambushed. They thought Florida was dead man walking, which always happens. It's like, you know, when a person's dying, they sundown and they, like, their whole life starts passing before them and they're like up out of their bed. It's like they can, you know, run like the wind for 5 minutes. It all comes back to them. And then, and that's what Florida did. Florida, they put it all together and then they went back to being dead. But yeah, Dan was pissed and was like, who did the evaluation? You know, he was pissed about the offensive line. There's got to be better than this. For a team that's been to the playoff semifinals 2 years in a row, this is the offensive line? And they're not connected and they're not working together and they're not, you know, combo blocking. They're not pinching down. You know, your first rule as an offensive lineman is if there's a free rusher, you close the A gap, the gap closest to the quarterback. And they're letting guys run right through there. Arch is getting clocked. Yeah, it was a mess. And so it wasn't all on Arch. Kind of like we were talking about with Chad Scott. Like, that running game wasn't, that worst running game since 1944 wasn't all on Chad Scott by any stretch. It was on that offensive line. It was on Steve Sarkisian, Kyle Flood. What? You see these guys every day in practice.
Yeah, but even then, like, okay, after Arch gets clobbered the first three times, I'll give him three. I feel like after two, you should start adjusting then, but let's just say three to give him the benefit of the doubt. After he gets blown the hell up the third time because you're throwing a 30-yard post route, maybe we should reel it back.
And your average time in the pocket was 3+ seconds, 3.3 seconds when everyone else is getting it out in 2.7.
Yeah. Like that should have happened earlier. You know, it should have happened earlier. And then you thought after OU, all right, we're going to see this for the rest of the year. Oh, wait, Kentucky, let's go back to it. Let's try it again.
Let's go back to it,
which that's mad disrespect to Mark Stoops, who's no longer there anymore. You know, Will Stein, we'll see what he can do. But that's just Sark telling me I completely disrespect Mark Stoops, and we're just going to go in and do whatever we want. Who cares who we have? I'm going to call whatever plays I want to because I think it's going to work against their personnel, even though our offensive line won't be able to hold up. Because that's all I saw. So it got better. It got better. They made the Connor Robinson and Cole Hudson move, which, again, should have happened a long time ago before it happened. But at least it happened. At least it happened. At least it happened. At least we saw them try to make an adjustment. But going back to the $10 million, that $10 million tells me them adjustments should have been made way before you get to that point. Sorry, yeah. That's just the rules. You didn't have to accept that $10 million. Sorry, remember, we talked about this shit. He didn't have to say that. He could have been like, oh, I'm good with seven. Let's spread it out. Nah, Sark said, let me get that 10. L'Oreal need a new pair of shoes. I got a baby on the way. You know what I'm saying? L'Oreal likes to go to Europe all the time. You know, let me get that 10, which I get it. I get it. Make all the paper you can, man. Life is short. But also, if you're going to make that paper, I got to see the results. And 2025, it just wasn't it.
Yeah, it was the beginning. It was the beginning. It was the beginning. Now we got to see what it can look like with a full set of tools. Felt like Texas was trying to repair an electrical circuit with nothing but a roll of masking tape.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this, because I see all these predictions coming in for the college football playoff. And, you know, a lot of people are picking Texas Tech to get to the finals, to beat Indiana. And here's my thing. This is when teams that can run the ball and play defense, can run the ball and stop the run, are usually the teams that fare well in the playoffs. Might be a reason Texas didn't get past Ohio State and Travion Henderson in that defense. But the best rushing team of the 12-team playoff is Indiana. Like, everyone talks about Fernando Mendoza and Cooper and, you know, the tight end. But Indiana's averaging 221 yards rushing per game. I like Indiana to get to the final against Georgia. What do you think?
I mean, yeah. Indiana, they're number one for a reason. The fact that they beat Ohio State, even though it was kind of an ugly game, they deserve to be where they are. So they're just, I don't think they're favored because they are Indiana still. People still don't respect the logo. And Kurt Cignetti, that's beautiful bulletin board material, even though being in the college football playoff, you shouldn't need any. And I like Hembley, man. Like, that dude, he runs hard. They got guys, multiple guys that could come in, run the hell out of the football, and it keeps them balanced to where Mendoza doesn't have to put up the crazy numbers that we saw from Joe Burrow and Caleb Williams and Bryce Young, previous Heisman quarterbacks that threw up Buku stats and a lot of reason why people are saying this was a down year for the award. But it's because this team is balanced. They don't have to necessarily lean on their quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner, to win them every game. But when he needs to make big throws, he's done that. And that's why they're in the position they are. And their defense, very stingy too. So I think that game is a pick 'em. I think Texas Tech is really good, and they're hitting the stride, and they're together, and Joey McGuire has done a hell of a job. And look, say what you want about Cody Campbell, man, but that's the name of the game. Like, it's Wild Wild West out here. So if you bringing in that Skrilla and you got more paper than so-and-so school over there and they bitching because they can't win or get to the point, sorry, this is what the rules are. Texas Tech has taken advantage of the rules, and we've seen in basketball, softball, and now football, they're enjoying the fruits of their labor. So I can't knock it, even though it sucks as a Texas fan to see them. I still got Tech homies that are thriving right now, and it's good to see my Tech homies happy. But yeah, that's one of them games, if it happens, Indiana versus Texas Tech, that's for sure must-see TV.
Well, and forgive me, Sun Belt, forgive me, James Madison, because the number one rushing team left in the playoff is James Madison.
Oh, man, that don't count.
They're averaging 245.8 yards per game on the ground, 5.56 yards per carry. What percentage chance do you give James Madison to beat Oregon?
The Westlake Pop Warner team could take James Madison into overtime right now.
That's so disrespectful.
I mean, what you want me to say?
Well,
what are we doing?
I mean, I'm just telling you, they're the number one. They're the number five rushing team in FBS. FBS. And, you know, Oregon got paddled by Indiana. Indiana went out to Autzen Stadium and said, excuse me while I whip this out. And Oregon was like, I have not felt Oregon all year. Look, Tulane, you know, I love me some Jake Retzlaff. I love that he nicknamed himself BY Jew. And then it all went to hell with BYU. But Jake Retzlaff, he can't do it by himself against Ole Miss. And, you know.
No, it's a bad game for Tulane. Because Ole Miss, they want to prove to everyone, we don't need that scumbag Benedict Arnold that went down to Baton Rouge. That's how they're going to be looking at it, as they should. They should feel betrayed. They should feel screwed over because that's exactly what happened. Now, are some of those guys being tampered with as we speak that are going to be playing in that game, that are going to join Lane Kiffin in Baton Rouge for 2026?
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Lane Kiffin wouldn't be a good coach if he didn't try to tamper with some of those guys. Like, he built a relationship with them. At least he should have. At least I would hope a head coach would build some type of relationship with guys, even though you might have the same motive as Lane Kiffin, which isn't great. But still, there's going to be guys that are going to be like, oh, with the NIL money, who knows how many players on that Ole Miss team is from the boot. But yeah, as of now, Golding, that's easy. Just let those guys play, prove to the world that they deserve to be there. Everybody's counting them out because, again, their head coach screwed them over. And see if you can make a run. Like Trinidad Chambliss. See if you can make some noise, bro.
Ferris State. You kidding me? Ferris State? That's up in northern Michigan, where they play hockey more than football. But kudos to Lane Kiffin for finding him, because there is talent everywhere.
It's everywhere, man.
Kurt Warner played at Northern Iowa.
Yeah.
Northern Iowa. Remember, you know who Northern Iowa's famous for?
No.
That point guard, Farouk Manesh. Remember that kid, Farouk Manesh?
Hit a couple of big. Iowa in the last second shot on Texas in the tournament.
Yeah.
That was rough.
Oh, that was rough.
God, that was rough.
That was rough. That was so rough.
That was shocker, right?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, yeah. That was Shaka. Shaka. Never won an NCAA. What'd he win?
No,
he never won an NCAA tournament game.
Never.
In Texas. He's here 6 years.
Yo, and I think Marquette is horrible this year, too.
Ooh.
I think they're horrible this year. They are 5-6. They've lost two straight. So, hey, this is what Shaka does, y'all. Marquette, he's going to come in with a lot of momentum. Marquette was excited that, you know, this is, he's one of ours. He's from Milwaukee, the area and stuff. All right. Y'all go see. Y'all go see.
Hey.
Look what's happening.
That was one of the all-time, you know, get fired upward situations because he was out. And good for him. Good for Shaka. I was rough on Shaka because Shaka didn't, he was trying to figure it out as he went. He abandoned Havoc and he, because he had big men. He inherited what, Prince eBay and then he had Mo Bamba, Jared Allen. I mean, he never had played with 7-footers. He always had 6'9" guys. You know, every one of his players on that Final Four team were 6'7", great length, great athleticism. Tallest guy was 6'9". They could all break you down, hit the three. Incredibly athletic VCU team. That was a play-in game team.
Good grief.
That made it all the way to the Final Four. It was Anthony Grant's team. Shaka took it over.
Yeah.
But then when he came to Texas, he's like trying to play half court basketball then, you know, with a big man. And he didn't know how to do that or hadn't done it. And it was awful.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, why would you get out of what got you there in the first place? Like, why?
Because like, Jared Allen was an Austin kid and, you know, he wanted
to. He goes to St. Stephen's. Like, why did anybody put Shaka on game that he's not going to fit what you do? He goes to say, no offense to Jared Allen. He's a terrific pro, terrific player. But what Shaka does well, I'm sorry, Jared Allen, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. No. So, you, like, I would have told him, like, look, guys, sorry, but y'all wanted me here. I have to recruit my type of player. And again, they were forcing his hand. They were saying, make him your type of player. That's what happened. Like you, that pressure, you can't let 5 stars get out of the town. I understand that, but I don't understand it enough to where it cost me my gig. Hell no. No, no, absolutely not. It's not going to cost me my job to make somebody happy that ain't in the trenches with us. When we're trying to fight for our goals, which is to win a championship. Like, you prove to those guys, hey, you're giving me the job for a reason. Let me prove to you that my style works. When my style, after I try it, when it doesn't work, then I'll listen to
y'all.
I'll listen to y'all on who I should recruit. But till then, nah, get out of my gym. But Shaka ain't have that backbone. He ain't have that.
Oh, no, he did not.
Which is sad, man. It's tough.
Poor Shaka. I mean, he had never, you know, he was suddenly in the same conference with Bill Self. And we know Bill Self was working the angles and getting the players. You know, he was working in the gray, shall we say. But you got to work in the gray in basketball.
A little bit, yeah.
Meanwhile, Shaka reels in Mo Bamba, and Mo Bamba had taken the money from Kentucky and then didn't deliver. And so Kentucky's like, hey, you need to expose your brother. And so he's down there in that pool at that apartment in San Marcos. I'm down here in my pool in San Marcos.
Yeah, Marcos, baby.
And my brother got paid to go to Texas.
Wow. And
like a day later, the NCAA was like, yeah, there's nothing to see here. Yeah. I mean, it was hilarious. It was one of the, I wish I could find that Facebook because it was like a Kentucky Facebook page that released the video of Mo Bamba's brother talking about how Mo Bamba took money to go to Texas. I mean, it was unbelievable, surreal. But anyway, Shaka didn't know what he was doing. He'd never been in with the Sharks. He'd been up there at VCU where guys were bitter that they didn't get scholarship offers from Maryland and Virginia. But by God, they were good. They're tough as nails from that, you know, bad news, Virginia. Yeah. Virginia Beach.
Some of the best hoopers, man. Some of the best hoopers are in that area. Durant, Carmelo, Iverson. Some of the best hoopers you're going to find come from that area.
Yeah. That's why VCU's always been a good job.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of talent right in there.
Yeah, yeah. You can just walk down the street and go see guys hooping at the park and be like, okay, he could go start for me 4 years. Just hooping at the park. What were your old stats in high school? 8, 8, and 8 will take you. It'll work.
You know? Hey.
You just gotta be
this is how hard it is to find that video. CB, Chris Bennett, world's greatest volunteer producer in the history of radio. Couldn't find it.
He can't find it. It is gone.
It's gone.
It's gone. If CB can't find it, that thing is really gone. Because I remember we were talking about this.
Oh my God. It is. I mean, he's like, you got this brother on a beach chair or poolside lounge chair. I'm sitting here at my apartment pool in San Marcos talking about how Texas paid for it. Texas pays for this apartment. Texas paid my brother.
Nah, bro. Texas ain't pay for none of that. Just lying.
Oh, but it was vintage. I mean, I was talking to AAU people who were like, oh, yeah. The Kentucky was paying the brother, thinking the brother was going to be able to deliver Mo Bamba, but there was this like mentor that Mo Bamba had that ended up being the guy you had to have, and Texas had that guy. So Texas got Mo Bamba. Kentucky's like, dude, we gave you $300,000 as a down payment.
That ain't nothing.
And we don't have any return on investment.
No, that old boy spent the hell out of that quick. New York brother.
Oh,
New York brother. Yeah, that money.
Probably by the end of the day in San Marcos.
Yeah. That got sent back to the homies in Harlem. Yeah, that went. Yeah, that didn't really go too far. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's some good.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that's Shaka Marquette, horrible this year. Remember, they lost first round last year in the tournament.
Always. Remember when they had Tyler Kolek?
Yeah. Like,
that team was loaded. They had a couple of big dudes. They had Tyler Kolek who could hit the three, break it down. That team was like, they beat everybody that year. They were a 2 seed.
Yeah.
And they,
you know, Shaka, like, tournament time. Expectations. VCU had no expectations. It was fun. We ain't supposed to be here. We're having a good time. But when them expectations come about, where the fan base expects you to advance in March every year. Every year.
Every year.
Every year. You got to be able to deliver. And Shaka couldn't do it. And going back home is not always the best thing. Him being the Milwaukee guy, because now he's comfortable. You know, he comfortable. He and Mama collard greens every other night. You know what I'm saying? Going to the old spots, seeing the old friends.
Well, here's the million-dollar question. Because Marquette, that's all they got is basketball. And we all know, you know, they went to the Final Four with
D. Wade. Man.
Who's the coach then? Tom Crean? Who was that?
Yeah. Good call. Yeah.
And so how much rope, how much leash does Shaka have? Because Marquette's serious about his basketball now.
Yeah.
We can't be 5-6. You know.
Yeah.
We can't be doing that. No, yeah, sir.
Big East. Big East ain't even the Big East. No more. Like, it's Dan Hurley and everybody else. St. John's, they cool, I guess. Rick Pitino's done a decent job, even though they lost a little early for my taste last year in the tournament with how good they were. But still, it's not like, you know, you're coaching against John Thompson and Jim Calhoun or anything like that. Jim Boeheim. Come on, Shaka. I want to root for Shaka, man. I don't want Shaka to struggle like this.
Right. Shaka's a good dude.
Yeah, sweet man.
Shaka's a good dude. He just you can't come to Texas in any coaching job and be trying to figure it out as you go. You've got to come in here with a way of life. You got to know exactly who you are, exactly how you do things, exactly how you recruit, so that every assistant knows exactly what their job is and deliver. Like Vic Schaefer, he's going to do it full court, you know, 40 minutes of hell. He's going to find those athletes that are two-way players. We're going to turn people over. We're going to run our offense. And you come play for me, you're going to be a WNBA player. It's no questions asked. Shaka, it was like, we got Mo Bamba.
We got Jared Allen.
Remember when they had Tevin Mack? Mack was crazy. Tevin Mack was like getting into fights within his own team.
Yeah.
Then one day they're cussing him in practice and he spits on the floor. And one of the assistant coaches is like, hey, go get a towel and clean that up. You're putting your teammates at risk. And he's like, F you. And then Shaka's like, hey. And Tevin Mack was like, F you too. And that was it. Tevin Mack was gone. And he was a big time guy.
Yeah.
He was a total cancer in that locker room. Who's the other kid that they had who was like super nice, super quiet, and kind of a scorer? He's probably I can see him. It's like number 12. Guard.
Chicago?
Huh? No.
Oh, okay.
He was just super athletic. He wasn't super skilled. He was.
God. Anyway, I don't know exactly what you're talking about.
That team was just. Oh, boy. Anyway. Yeah, Roach. Thank you. Kerwin Roach. Good. There he is. CB coming through again. That was a tough team to watch.
That was tough.
I mean, Jared Allen, that team was like 6-22.
Horrible.
And I guarantee you, you talk to Jared Allen, you're like, what do you remember about that 6-22 team? He'd probably be like, I blacked it all out.
Yeah.
I don't remember a thing. Yeah, that was awful. All right.
He still showed flashes to be such a high lottery pick. Which kudos to him because it's worked out. But he's had a really good career and he's gotten some pretty big contracts. And every big man would love to have a player like Jared Allen.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I did a little more research real quick just to come back on this. When Indiana played Ohio State in the Big Ten championship, Indiana won the game 13-10. Ohio State ran it 26 times for 58 yards, 2.2 yards per carry. Indiana can play some defense now. I think people are sleeping on Indiana.
How you gonna sleep on the number one team in the nation?
Well, I'm just seeing all these Texas Tech picks. And Texas Tech beat up on the Big 12. And the Big 12 was not good this year. Not good. Sam Levitt's like, get me out of here.
And yeah, he waiting. Sam Levitt, he's waiting for everything to shake up. Because Sam Levitt's the top quarterback right now. Everybody.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get John Mateer money.
Yeah.
He's going to get John Mateer money.
Well, I think he got that at Arizona State, to be honest. No,
they got him, well, maybe going into this past year. If his agent is any good after going to the college football playoff, yeah, he should have gotten a nice big raise. And if it wasn't, he's going for that raise right now. Because that's the guy that Hugh Freeze needed. Not Jackson Arnold. Not Peyton Thorne. Hugh Freeze bet on the wrong quarterbacks and lost. Sam Levitt, that dude can play. That dude's a better version of John Mateer. He's more accurate. He's got the quicks. Yeah, and CB's mentioning how Levitt burned all the bridges down the way, and Kenny Dillingham's been nothing but high road, thanking Sam Levitt for everything.
Bridges he burn? What'd he do?
You know, he just kind of couldn't wait to get out of there.
Yeah, it's not fun. You're not winning. Like, the heart and soul left and is in New York now. And when he was the heart and soul of the Giants before he got hurt, that was Cam Scataboo. Like, that's – it ain't fun no more without crazy-ass Scataboo in the locker room. That's just real. That dude, his spirit, it's infectious, man. I didn't see it before. I was kind of a hater at one point, you know. But then I was like, yo, this guy, he's just different. Like – he's a weird guy, but weird in a beautiful way. Like, it's kind of relatable. Like you know a D-bag friend, kind of like Cam Scataboo, but he's your homie. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the vibe he gets. But you know he's going to play his ass off. Once Scataboo left, just nobody was able to, you know, fill in that spirit.
Arizona State fans got upset because Sam Levitt was a captain. He didn't go to the football banquet and just, you know, kind of made an unannounced exit. But
what does he need to go to the send me my award?
Right.
Like, what? This is Arizona State, man. See, like,
you know how fans are.
Yeah, I do. But some of these fans, man, they got to be more realistic.
It's like as soon as Leonga LaFau, you know, as soon as word gets out, he's headed to the portal. Everyone's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody like, he ain't that good anyway. I saw somebody go at DeAndre Morrow here. Who was that? Naaman? I think that was you, Naaman. You my guy. I love you, bro. But you went at DeAndre Morrow once we started talking about him leaving and say, we don't need him, Zay. Jermaine Bishop's on his way, which I'm with it. If Jermaine Bishop that dude, then cool. But yeah. When guys leave, they love them when you're here, hate you when you're gone. And
DeAndre Moore is a pro. Like, he's a good route runner. He's a leader. He's going to do the right things. He takes care of his body. He's early. He's on time. He does the right thing. He's a pro. And I think he was frustrated this year. You know, Ryan Wingo was the number one guy. Wingo's kind of a happy-go-lucky guy. And, you know, doesn't have that edge maybe that you want to see in a number one, that I own you edge. And so, you know, when you're not getting the targets, I mean, DeAndre Moore, I think, was third behind Parker Livingston targets. Emmett Mosley was like closing in on him.
It's tough.
And then DeAndre Moore had a big drop in the Georgia game. A couple of them.
Yeah.
And normally he doesn't do that. So it was a weird year. Really weird year. Bad year.
But I get that he acts like a pro, but is he good enough to be a pro? You know? And you're right, Chip. That's a good point that you just made. The dude had number one wide receiver aspirations. Like, when they were asking them before the season started, hey, what are your goals set for this year? Biletnikoff. I want to break the touchdown record.
Biletnikoff.
Jordan Shipley, I'm coming for you. I want to break the yards record. He ain't get close to that. So if
he wanted the touchdowns, he wanted the touchdowns record.
Okay, cool. But if
Shipley had 13 touchdowns.
Yeah, if he's saying all that, he's expecting wide receiver one treatment. And he's out here getting wide receiver three treatment. So, yeah, I get being frustrated. And you look at that Ryan Wingo, who at times looked like he doesn't want to be a wide receiver one, yet he's getting wide receiver one treatment. I'd be salty, too. I'd be salty, too. But for the NFL, I don't know if I'd be that salty. Maybe another team, but clearly DeAndre Moore is betting on himself. His camp is betting on him. He clearly has a lot of yes men around that are telling him this is a great idea. I don't know what his mock draft is. I haven't heard anybody really talking about that, Mel Kiper Jr., any of those folks. But I wish him the best. I really do. I want to be proven wrong by DeAndre Moore. Like, I don't want to be right about this. I don't want to see him struggle. But I have to give y'all my honest opinion because that's what the job requires. And my honest opinion about DeAndre Moore is I don't think he's NFL ready yet.
Yeah,